On Rules and Public Affairs, today, June 13, 2003, and colleagues were looking at a revised schedule from the agenda in that we will first look to the work session on Senate Bill 886. Then we will have the public hearing on House Bill 2356, and after that, a work session on Senate Bill 7. We will not be reviewing or taking a hearing on House Bill 3611, nor HJR 54, nor HB 3565. So hopefully we'll be out of here a little sooner than maybe what you would have expected after reading that agenda.
Hi, everyone.
So with that, then, let's go forward on a work session with Senate Bill 886. I believe you have the A4 amendments in your file. And these amendments, colleagues, the A4 amendments were provided just as putting a little bit more certainty in the bill, and it was suggested by I think some other members who had reviewed this bill. It was, as you can see in the Hand and Gross version that's attached to the A4 amendment, it there was, and also there was concern from the department about providing training to the organizations, volunteers, basically. And that's where the cost was driven up, where there was still a fiscal impact, even though it was a minor fiscal impact, or minimal fiscal impact, that the department believed that removing that subsection 5B of section 1 that's on page 2 of the engrossed version, that then eliminates the training cost. And they actually suggested that that they thought that it might work better to get some kind of training still. And yet, you know, as I looked at that too, I thought that you know, we're putting an extra burden on these organizations that really isn't necessary when there are other provisions in the bill to make sure that these organizations are going to provide the proper outreach, I guess, to their clients and to the members of their organization. On down on subsection 7, there on page 2 as well, the it was a removal of the mandatory termination of such a relationship under this pilot program. And there on line 41, it was, as you can see, what happened was that the way the original language that was sent to us said it was that this relationship could be terminated just by a request of a client. And basically it didn't allow for the faith-based or community organization to even respond to that client's request or client's issue. It could still be terminated just if the client requests it. So we strengthened that a little bit to make sure that the organizations had an opportunity to give their input before the department would make a decision to terminate them in the program. And let's see, the final down on below, the activities and services provided by the faith-based. Oh, that was just an additional reason to terminate the services or terminate the relationship. So, maybe you can move adoption of the dash A4s.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 8 4 amendments, proposed amendments to Senate Bill 886.
Representative Flores has moved adoption of the Dash 8 4 amendments to Senate Bill 886. Any discussion?
Just a question.
Representative Musser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your deliberations with DHS or whoever was drafting these amendments, the only concern I would have is, will these entities at least be told about confidentiality and child abuse? Those are two issues that I think are extremely important when you're working with, you know, the general public, to be looking for those issues.
Actually, after discussions with Senator Shields on this issue, for the faith-based organizations, for instance, pastors and other religious leaders, they are currently under the child abuse reporting requirements, and there is already in statutes that, you know, there with these requirements that when they have their members of their organization involved in these kind of things, they also have to assure at least that the organizations are aware of those issues as well. So it is covered, and the department themselves, you know, they had assured us as well that they were going to be making sure that when they go into these kind of relationships with these organizations, that, you know, they are satisfied that the organizations could handle these issues too. And it's just removing the mandate from the statute for this additional training of volunteers when these organizations, you know, the idea of having volunteers do this is to make sure that you get people there to help without having to go through a process that actually inhibits the volunteer activity.
As long as, you know, the child abuse reporting laws are followed, and confidentiality in particular, I assume, since I've worked with faith-based organizations with the public sector, that at least in our department we addressed that, but I wanted to make sure it was on the record that is an extremely important item.
Other discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a process question. What do you anticipate at the end of the pilot program happening? Is this going to be a report that comes back to the legislature as to how this works, that perhaps would be a savings from the general fund, or is this going to be a legislation that you anticipate? Or,
well, from my understanding from Senator Shields is that, and as you can see on page 3 of the legislation, section 2, sub 2, is that the department shall provide a report to the next legislative assembly on the program. And the sense from Senator Shields is that, you know, really the goal of this bill is to provide opportunities for faith-based organizations and civic organizations to have an opportunity to get to help members of their own organization with issues that they may not know about now, and it's providing support to those individual members that need state assistance in a way that will hopefully get them off of state assistance sooner because of that additional support from their own community. Mm-hmm. And so it should result in a savings, but, you know, we're just still looking to see what actually happens,
right,
when there is a little bit more interaction between the state and these organizations. In a way, too, that, as you may recall in the testimony from Senator Shields, has faced quite a bit of scrutiny from civil libertarian groups, making sure that there is a separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to have been accomplished in this bill as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Further discussion? Okay. Let's call the roll. Oh, I'm sorry. First, we're still on the motion to adopt the amendments. Any objection to adopting the at Dash 8 4s? See no objections, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of move Senate Bill 886 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Flores has moved Senate Bill 886 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Okay. Let's call the roll.
Representative
Backlund. Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Lewis Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative
Berger.
Aye. And chair votes aye. And anybody want to carry this? Or should we look to consent calendar? No?
Consent would be great.
All right. Any objection to consent calendar? All right. So ordered. And Senate Bill 886 is moved to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. Moved to the consent calendar. And that closes the work session on Senate Bill 886. And we will open up public hearing on House Bill 2356. And first welcome Megan Palau as the committee administrator for this bill. And we ask Representative Gallegos to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, colleagues. Happy to be here today. I'd like to thank the chair for having a hearing on House Bill 2356. I just want to make sure that on the record I'm able to state my support for this bill and why I feel it's important that we pass this bill. I'm State Representative Mary Gallegos. I live in House District 29, which represents Forsborough, Cornelius, and Hillsborough. I live in Cornelius, and I am a ratepayer to PGE. I don't live within the city limits of Portland. I live in the city of Cornelius, and I've never had the opportunity to vote for anybody who's running for mayor, city council, or any of the government positions within the city of Portland. I do to pay my electric bill. My mother lives in my district. She pays her electric bill, and we're dependent upon electricity today. It's a vital commodity, but clearly I'm sure all of us have electricity in our homes. I'm concerned about what's happening with the potential of a public takeover of a very large private company that services me, that services my district, that services the people who live in my district. And as their state representative, I believe that they need representation at that table, especially when they as well don't have the opportunity to vote for perhaps that governing body that will take over this public entity, should that be one of the cases. And my concern is because even the greatest and best of intentions sometimes have unintended consequences. And as I've found here in this body, serving, this is my sixth month as a state representative, I found that we have visited over and over again what were great policies or great things that other people thought that we should do. And as well as the tough budget times that we're in, that maybe some things that other people did or we did a long time ago weren't necessarily the most prudent and had unintended consequences that needed significant fixing. And I can name a couple. We all remember what happened with DMV. That was great. It cost a lot of money to the taxpayers, but somebody thought it was a great idea, even though it was done in an agency, perhaps, that those decisions were made. But there were significant consequences to the taxpayers as a result. I'm concerned as well about the precedence that this perhaps takes. A private company with assets all over the state, power generating facilities, transmission lines throughout the state, as well as water rights, surface water rights throughout the state. My district has, apparently this company has water rights to water wells in my district. And I'm concerned about those things as well. I would be concerned about the precedents that this would set for, say, if natural gas had an issue. Should Northwest Natural Gas be taken over and its pipelines that are throughout the entire state, new pipeline projects being taken on in the state, we would be concerned. It affects an awful lot of people, and all I believe this bill does is allow us as a legislature to represent those people who don't necessarily have a place at the table, and if it's a great idea, it's a great plan, they have a great deal going, I'm sure that we'd all support it and support the city of Portland should they want to take over this private company and create a public utility out of it. I just think that that's our responsibility as legislators, to represent people, individuals, not companies, not businesses, not special interests, but real people. And the real people in my district all have electricity, all have electricity bills, and are concerned about the cost of that energy. So I would urge really some cautious concern for what's happening, and hope that we'll all feel the need to support the citizens in our district and pass this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill to the committee. I'm wondering, what are the differences between the current situation with this company being a private company, beholden to its stockholders for income, and under the control of the stockholders, presumably under the PUC in connection with the regulations that the state has? How is it different now than it would be in that respect, at least, in, that your constituents and you yourself have any different say now than you would have under the bill?
Stockholders.
Under public ownership by the city of Portland.
Well, the stockholders are willing participants. They take that gamble. I, as a taxpayer, don't necessarily have a say right now in the opportunity for this PUC or PUD to be created. I may be obligated as a ratepayer, but I have no say at the table with this PUD that will be created, and a governance board of whom, and perhaps an obligation to failure. I mean, we can look at the water billing system in Portland. It's still not resolved, and the ratepayers, I'm sure, who are the taxpayers, are having to pick up the tab. It still isn't resolved. So as stockholders, they take a risk. They are willing participants. They, you know, deal with the stock market, but us as a taxpayer, if there's problems or a debacle, it gets passed on to the taxpayer, and in this case, it's both the same, the ratepayers and the taxpayers.
Okay. Another question, if I may. Let's suppose that there was a proposal made to purchase, for the city of Portland to take over this company. Would you propose then that the legislature meet in special session to consider that, or how would you operationalize this bill under those circumstances?
Well, clearly, we can, the Speaker or Senate President can call a quick convening of the House. I've heard lots of speculation. We may be seeing one another more frequently here over the next 18 months anyway. And perhaps, depending on what the, I know, perhaps the timing of such could be coordinated where we're already gathering for some big party already. Or I don't think it's too inconvenient when the price and the number of people and the order of magnitude of some project of this undertaking, that one or two days of public hearings by out in the open on the cameras, on the microphone of receiving testimony is too great to ask. If you were here last session, I'm sure you knew what it was like to get a call and convene. So, and I don't know what that's like, so, but I'm assuming since it happened, it's easy to do.
Thank you. Sure. Representative
Post? Representative Gallegos, I was just going to ask you about the Public Utility Commission oversight. It's my understanding that this entity would not be regulated by the PUC. Is that correct?
I'm asking for some clarity from Legislative Council right now, and I'm waiting for that back. And, you know, if I might just express another concern, the details of Senate Bill 1149 from last session that many people supported and passed out of this body, which asked for more investors' access to the open market, deregulation. Under this PUD model, they would not be subject to any of those right now under 1149. I'm asking for clarity. But there's other issues as well with the PUC. Right now that we have another member who's retiring, there are two open positions, and the structure of that board will change. There's a lot of things up in the air right now that will affect how you know, the PUC will operate in the future, and might change people's concerns who are working to remodel that and have brought bills towards this body. I mean, the same group of people are asking for two different things here, changes to the PUC and the way they work, and changes here to, have been asking about Portland being able to take over this asset. I just think there's a lot of things in the air that need to be resolved before too much drastic stuff takes place.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Well, again, an additional question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Are there circumstances under which you think it would be reasonable for the City of Portland to purchase this company?
There might be, but I mean, I haven't heard or seen anything as yet that have. I mean, I'm concerned about rates to customers, rates to industry, how it would affect our economy, and who's obligated to pick up the tab should there be failure. But with the lack of some public plan to where people can buy into it and feel comfortable and what those guarantees are down the road, and those, again, the long-term implications, we have to be concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Something further, Mr. Close? Representative Close, did you have anything further?
No, thank you.
All right. Appreciate your testimony.
Sure.
Thank you. Gary Conkling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Conkling. I'm here today representing the Regional Power Study Group, which is a coalition of four counties, Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas, and Marion County, that have formed an intergovernmental agreement, the purpose of which is to work on a governance structure and a set of operating principles for a publicly owned utility in the event that City of Portland is successful in acquiring PGE through an auction process that I think is underway, though it's awfully hard to tell. Most of us, because the auction at Enron and its creditors' discretion has been made secret, most of us do not have really any knowledge about how that process is going, but as best we can tell, it is continuing.
I told you, Representative Close.
Mr. Chair, would you just ask Mr. Conkling if he could repeat the name of the group and the counties again, because he went so fast.
Oh, sure.
We couldn't keep up.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to talk fast.
Thank you.
It's the Regional Power Study Group, and it includes Multnomah, Marion, Clackamas, and Washington County.
Thank you.
And they have entered in, excuse me, they have entered into a formal intergovernmental agreement for the limited purpose of working on governance and operating principles for publicly owned utility. This morning, I want to express opposition to this bill, not because there's a lack of some sympathy for why it has come forward, and I think a discussion in front of this legislative body about this issue is perfectly appropriate, and so I applaud the discussion, but don't think the particular tool is a very useful tool to help the public interest. And in fact, there are state interests and regional interests and a mix of other special interests in this state that bear on the sale of this utility. But it is the debacle of Enron that has brought us to this place, not the City of Portland. The City of Portland is not the villain. It is attempting to be the white knight. And from our point of view, it doesn't need to be, I think, criticized or perhaps even blocked in a legitimate effort to represent public interests of Oregonians in an attempt to have local ownership and control of one of the most valuable assets in this state, a major electric utility that serves a majority of Oregonians and a good share of our commercial and industrial load. The debacle that occurred is the massive corporate fraud that was perpetrated by Enron, and I mean, let's face it, it isn't really an unknown fact. It's bankruptcy, which has not only destroyed energy markets, electricity markets, and gas markets in this country, but it has also left huge debts, sprawling debts across the country, and emptied out pension accounts, including many of the employees, the good employees of PGE in our own state. So if we have anybody that we should be upset at, I think we should be upset at the people who engineered the debacle that Enron has given us. There is a great book about the inside account of Enron, which I would, if anybody of you would like it, I'll share the book title with you afterwards. It's really chilling to see how a publicly traded corporation in the United States could get away with some of the things that it got away with. This is not about ideology. PGE is an important asset. If there was a private buyer, I think my clients, I suspect the city of Portland, would be really happy if that private sector purchaser had the goal of running the utility locally for the benefit of ratepayers in the communities in which those facilities serve. There is no evidence such a private sector buyer is on the horizon. Northwest Natural attempted to purchase PGE and backed out. And as best I know today, again in the auction process, which is secret, and I'm not privy to its details, Northwest Natural is not now a bidder. If they are, I think people would be very interested in that opportunity. But if they're not, one has to look at what are some of the possibilities for purchasers. Purchasers might include, apparently according to Enron, a creditors management committee. If anybody has watched a company with creditor management trying to get out of bankruptcy, it has one single objective: maximize profits as quickly as possible so you can sell the asset or portions of the assets as quickly as possible to ultimately get the creditors the money that they want. Does that sound like the management that you like to have for PGE? Or another option is that what happened to PG&E in California, it was stripped apart. Portions of it were ripped apart, particularly its generating assets, and sold because they could fetch higher value separately than as a whole. The California Public Utility Commission attempted to stop it. A federal bankruptcy court overruled them. Is that what we want to see? Is some of the valuable generating assets and power contracts that PGE has that benefit ratepayers sold off? I doubt it. The one and only opportunity that I'm aware of for potential local control is what the city of Portland is doing. It strikes me that we should be forming a coalition to support their effort, not finding barriers to prevent it. The more legitimate discussion, the one that we're having and have had with the city of Portland, and we have had our share of frustrations in those negotiations, I'll be honest with you, but they are ongoing, and we in fact have reached some tentative agreements about how such a publicly owned utility would be managed with a regional governing board that would in fact reflect the broader interests of the district where PGE serves, that it would have an arm's length relationship with the city of Portland. So it wouldn't be a bureau. It wouldn't be a cash cow. It would be essentially a model that does exist. There are, in fact, municipal utilities that have such a model. And even the exploration of, in fact, the possibility of creating an actual regional utility that would be a separate entity apart from the city of Portland. The city has been willing to explore such an option. This is the stuff that we should be talking about. This is the stuff of legislative interest. This is the stuff of interest to other public power entities in this state who have a very legitimate concern about a huge, newly formed public utility sort of plopping down in the middle of their statutes, really distorting what we would do to really take care of many of their interests that are in rural areas typically, or certainly in smaller dimensions. We also have the issue of preference power from Bonneville Power. That is a substantial issue, not only for the ratepayers within the PGE service territory, but everyone else who actually receives preference power in this state because they are a publicly owned utility. There are other dimensions of that. Today, PGE ratepayers, at least residential and farm user ratepayers, benefit from something known as the residential rate exchange, which isn't power, but it's cash, basically, that comes to them in lieu of getting preference power. As a publicly owned utility, this new utility wouldn't qualify, as I understand it, under federal law for the cash benefit. There isn't adequate preference power for the utility to acquire. This is an issue that needs to be negotiated, and it's an important issue. It's a sensitive issue to all of our rate, virtually all of our ratepayers in the state of Oregon. So I think, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there is a lot for us to deliberate over. This particular bill isn't a very useful vehicle to do it. And I'm not sure that we need to legislate the discussion. We need to have the discussion. It's timely, even though this process to sell PGE was to have had a bidder announced last December. Now we're told there might be some kind of an announcement at the end of this month. It may not occur, so the timing is hard to judge. But the conversation is germane, and in my opinion, at least timely now. So I would encourage you to press forward on the discussion, but sort of release this bill from any further anxiety and just let it rest at ease in this committee. I think that's the proper place for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Close?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary, I guess I'm a little surprised that you would see this body voting on this as a barrier and not simply oversight. I think that's what it would be, just the chance to debate the bill and to vote on it. I'd like to ask you a couple of things. If these counties were to take this over and make it a PUD, how would that compare to PUDs in the United States in size?
Madam Chair, Representative Close, actually, the counties I represent aren't interested in forming a people's utility district, nor is the city of Portland. There is an effort that is completely separate from anything that we're involved with, an initiative that, as of yesterday, was qualified and been placed on the ballot later this year in Multnomah County to form a PUD in Multnomah County. I have my own opinions about that, but really that's not what we're proposing. What we're talking about is a purchase of PGE and running it as a public utility in the entirety of what the utility is today, not parcelizing it into portions of it, such as county PUDs. So I guess the answer to your question is we're not trying to create a PUD. We're not involved with the people that are.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
Well, then let's call it a public entity that would be a utility. Is that fair? And what would the size be? My question was about the size. If you put these four counties together, how would that compare nationally to similar entities that are public and are utilities?
Madam Chair, Representative Close, the service territory for PGE is actually broader than these four counties. As best I understand, it encompasses six counties. It also includes portions of Polk and Yamhill County. And as Representative Gallegos noted, it also has facilities in other parts of the state. The attempt to acquire would be to acquire all portions of the utility, including its generating assets. What its relative size would be, it certainly would be larger than any other publicly owned utility in the state of Oregon. I believe it would be larger, but certainly as large, if not larger, than publicly owned utilities in the state of Washington. It would be a large publicly owned utility.
Would it be the third largest in the United States?
Madam Chair, Representative Close, it might be. I just don't have the knowledge of this. It would be large. There's no question it would be large.
Okay. One last question, please. Thank you. Considering the preference power rates, would there be a scenario where these four counties could get lower power rates than other counties, such as mine, that would be still under PacifiCorp or whatever electric utility?
Madam Chair, Representative Close, under federal law, publicly owned utilities do qualify for preference power. from the Bonneville system. It has to exist before you can get it. And it also has variable pricing. Others, I think people here today that are closer to that and can give you a little more precise answer. But I don't know that preference power or power that's being sold by BPA is as much of a bargain as it once was. But it changes over time. It's not a constant. Energy prices have moved around. So the answer to your question is, would it qualify for preference power? Yes, it would. Would it automatically take it because it was a benefit? Maybe or maybe not. In part because it doesn't exist. There isn't enough of it there. So for Bonneville to meet its requirement, it would actually have to go out on the market and buy it, which might mean that it was not any advantage to do so and might create a disadvantage for others in the process.
But there could be a scenario where one county would get lower rates than another, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Close, no more of a scenario that exists today. By the way, the four counties that I represent aren't trying to form something separately. Your question has implied that. We're working with the City of Portland. The City of Portland is the only public entity in Oregon attempting to purchase PGE. It's attempting to buy all of its assets. We're not, as a county, attempting to buy it separately from the City of Portland.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, you mentioned purchasing the entire assets of PGE several times, and you also mentioned the PG&E in California being stripped apart of its generating capacity in one area and presumably distribution in a different company. Could you explain to people like me who don't really understand electric power, the electric power business, why it's important or why it would be useful for Oregonians to keep this company intact rather than having it stripped apart as happened to PG&E?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, some of the generating assets that PGE has are very advantageous. Among them are power contracts with Mid-Columbia public utility districts in the state of Washington. I believe this is these contracts have a long-standing connection that was involved in some debt financing that PGE provided to get these long-term contracts. They're very favorable. They're very attractive. They also have other relatively low-cost hydroelectric assets. They also have very valuable transmission assets, a connection to the intertie. These are the kinds of things in the electrical business that have value, separate from operating a utility that includes not only generation but transmission and distribution assets. We think of poles and wires, what serves our house as the distribution system. But an electric utility that's integrated, such as PGE, has both transmission as well as generating assets. As a whole, its value is that it is profitable. I think everybody concedes that PGE is profitable, which is one of the reasons why it could be acquired through debt financing and operated on its own. It's a self-sustaining entity. And by the way, there have been economic analysis that would show that there are some built-in economic advantages to a public acquisition that probably would offset the debt cost, may or may not, and it's hard to completely make judgments about rates. We've never made any assertions about whether rates would go up or down. There are others who make claims that they will go up. I don't know that they can make that claim either. But the truth of the matter is, there are advantages that public entities have through bonding and other means, and I can describe them more in detail if you'd like, that probably would suggest that it could bond successfully and operate this utility on its profits. Companies as competent as Goldman Sachs have made that analysis, both for Willamette Valley Power, a predecessor effort to try to acquire PGE, and Goldman Sachs is currently serving as financial advisor for the City of Portland.
follow-up. What I'm really trying to find out is why we care. Why do we care whether this company is broken up or not? What difference does it make to Oregonians whether it's broken up or not? I mean, I'm a, from the, and let me just say, preface the question by saying you started out by saying that that private businesses tried to, somebody tried to attract private businesses to make an offer for this company, that one did make it and then pulled out, and there's nobody else available, and that's why Portland came in. So why should Portland care, and why should the four counties care whether this business is maintained intact or whether it's broken up?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, well, I think if you did break up the utility, I think your chances of having higher rates would be much greater. If, in fact, these generating assets were separated from the ratepayers, this would be a utility that would fundamentally have to buy all of its power on the market. Now, sometimes that might be good, but as we've seen in recent times, that could be awful. This is a utility that has about 50% of its power that it for to serve its current load that it buys on the market. And you'll recall that as a result of that problem in the recent spike in electrical prices, the Public Utility Commission in this state approved one of the largest rate increases we've ever seen. It was more than 30% for residential ratepayers and closer to 50% for commercial and industrial ratepayers. And that those rate increases are currently in place. You expose the ratepayers to an even greater volatility by the absence of generating, particularly low-cost generating assets, and the chances of them having higher rates are, I think, are based on our experience, pretty good. So that's one of the reasons why you want to keep those low-cost generating assets tied to the rates.
Representative Barnhart? One further follow-up. Let me get at the same question from a different angle. I'm assuming that if I'm a private investor and I'm bidding on with the trustee in the bankruptcy on this business, I might find it extremely advantageous to own some of those long-term power contracts that currently that produce power at very low cost, because I could then turn around and sell it at the market rate and pocket the difference. Whereas some other parts of the business that don't generate a great deal of profits themselves might be a great deal less interest to me. And that in effect, what would happen at the end of the day is that the ratepayer actually pays the difference. Would that be another way of saying the same kind of thing that you're talking about now? I mean, why private individuals coming into it invest might actually find it much more advantageous to themselves to buy only a piece of the company rather than the whole thing.
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I think that's correct. Obviously, an investor-owned utility such as PGE is today is subject to rate regulation, including return on investment limitations that are affected. And so when you look at an investor is going to look at opportunity costs and how else they might invest their money, I think you're correct. I think portions of the utility look a lot more attractive than running necessarily the whole utility as an investor-owned utility. Now, I can't say that there's no one that would be disinterested in that. But when you sort of think about a utility here in Oregon as part of an integrated utility someplace else, you aren't able to exactly come up with lots of sort of likely candidates. The one that sort of looked likely, Northwest Natural, that could have affected some efficiencies through distribution, because the Northwest Natural is fundamentally a distribution company, is one that's already tried and apparently backed away from buying it. It's hard to come up with anybody else that this would seem to make a lot of sense, having a whole utility in their portfolio. So I think I'm trying to suggest you can come at the conclusion that I made two ways. One, sort of as a process of elimination, but I think it's easy to also say that if you could have an asset and it could be outside rate regulation, particularly return on investment regulation, you would find it more valuable as opposed to having a whole utility which would be subject to those limitations.
Right. Two more questions, if I may. Thank you. The first one, those investors who are likely to want to buy pieces of this business, where are they located? They could be located anywhere in the world, couldn't they?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's absolutely right. And I mean, I think a good way of seeing that reality is to actually look at Enron's portfolio. They have assets all over the world, apparently two of which are relatively profitable, PGE and a utility in South America.
Thank you. And the last question. And it is slipping away. I had a very good one. Give me just a second to see if I can come up with it. Would I have liked it?
Yeah.
Yes, you would have.
Oh, good. Well, please think.
Yes, you. This is the last question. The trustee in the bankruptcy court has the obligation of maximizing the value of the business for the creditors of the business, and has absolutely no interest and or reason under law to protect the ratepayers. Is that not correct,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart? I believe that that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Acklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary, if the city of Portland were to purchase PGE and convert it then to a public utility district, would the employees, the public employees, would they be on PERS, for example?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Acklin, again, if the city purchased it, it wouldn't become a public utility district.
It would be publicly owned
entity, and it would be if the city managed it under some model similar to, say, for example, the city of Tacoma, which operates a municipal utility. It would be a municipal utility structure. Though, as I mentioned, we're at least exploring the possibility of a different structure, a structure that would be a regional utility, would be separate from the city itself. But in either case, yes, the employees would be public employees. Whether they would be eligible for PERS, I don't know the answer to that. They may well be, but there might be circumstances in which they're not.
Okay. Representative Berger.
Yes. Could you explain to me what you mean about a regional utility separate from the city of Portland?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, the counties before the city of Portland took the lead in attempting to purchase PGE had an organization known as Willamette Valley Power, which was an idea of creating essentially a regional utility. The thesis of that particular proposal was to do it through a series of intergovernmental agreements. I think as more exploration of that idea became apparent, people felt that that would be a cumbersome and perhaps wobbly foundation for a foundation. The alternative idea was a state-chartered public corporation. Now, that would be obviously a vehicle that the legislature would create. The logic of that idea is that it wouldn't directly interfere with state laws relating to municipal utilities, people's utility districts, or rural electric co-ops. So it would be, in Oregon law, public corporations are really separate from those, and so you wouldn't have to plop it down in the middle of their statutes. The other advantage to a public corporation is that you really almost have a completely new canvas in which to design and create your entity, so you can borrow from portions of law so that it could run more or less like a utility, because I think that would be obviously what you would be looking for. But because of its unusual circumstances, you could put into place the tools that you need to deal with that utility. For example, PGE has a trading floor. I'm unaware of any other publicly owned utility in Oregon that has a trading floor. Things of that type. So that has been our idea. And just the practical problems here. The city is, in its defense, is doing what it can in a very complex, uncharted, and secret auction process. So understandably, its focus has been on how do we acquire the asset. And I think that that's fair. What we have attempted to do as constructive partners with the city is to try to create options to look at. It may well be that there is no other practical option, at least at the outset of a purchase, if it occurs, than a municipal utility. In which case, then I think we have to just deal with that reality. But the regional utility at least is something we should explore to have as a backup or even potentially a superior option if we can design it in a way that people say, hey, that has the features that either gives us the greatest confidence or perhaps would provide the maximum benefits.
Well,
my understanding is that you don't actually know for sure that there are not other private buyers that are bidding.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bridger, that's absolutely right. We don't. And the way I've reached the conclusion that I've reached is that if they did, they'd already have taken the money. But one thing about the creditors, this doesn't have much to do with altruism. It has to do with money, understandably, and it's certainly what they should be doing. So if they had a great buyer, we would have had a bidder announced, and this process would be moving right along. But the fact that we don't suggests the obvious, which is that they don't have the bidder that they're looking for that's going to pay them whatever price that they think they should get. Incidentally, just as sort of a little footnote, the book value of PGE is something in the neighborhood of $1.8 to $1.9 billion. Enron paid more than $3 billion to buy PGE. Just as a footnote. So those are numbers that are in the public record.
The regional power group has confidence, apparently, that if the sale were to go through, that either a state chartered operation or a municipal utility has the expertise within that confines to run a utility and to be successful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bridger, in fact, that's an excellent question. It's exactly on point where a lot of our discussions have been. And there is, on this point, I think absolute agreement between city officials and the county officials and really other stakeholders that we have talked to as well is having a professional board. It wouldn't be a kind of a buddy system or a crony group, but a professional board of men and women who had business understanding and some utility experience who could serve as a real governing board and serve as a policy-setting board for a management system to operate this utility. I think it's a very, very critical question, and it's one that people feel very strongly about. The last thing we need to do is to preserve this utility in local ownership and then botch its management. Nobody wants to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further questions? Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Sandy Flicker.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I might point out while she's coming up that Eugene Water and Electric Board also has a trading floor.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sandy Flicker, and I represent the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. And I'm here today neither to speak in favor or oppose House Bill 2356, but bring the perspective, I guess, of the rural folks in the state, because this issue clearly has an impact on the folks that live in rural Oregon. I'm going to quickly just show you this map, which I apologize for not having copies, but I think you can all see. The gray area on this map is where just the electric cooperatives serve. So if you add a little bit to that, it also takes in the municipal electric utilities and the people's utility districts. We serve together about 25% of the state. The rural electric co-ops serve about 10% of the state, but about 65% of the state geographically. We have a huge presence geographically in the state. Obviously, the reason we only serve about 10% of the state is because our density is extremely low. Many utilities serve less than one customer per mile of line, and our average is about 6 customers per mile of line. It's not very many people. The reason that we have concerns, and I will just say for the record that we support public power, we support local control, we are locally controlled utilities. The difference between cooperatives and people's utility districts and municipal electric utilities is that we are private entities. We are private, not-for-profit utilities that are governed by our locally elected boards of directors. And I guess I want to make sure you understand that those boards are elected boards of directors. We believe it's a very, very good model. It serves its purpose in that because we have a we do not have a profit motivation, we can serve in those very, very rural areas on an at-cost basis. And it allows the people that live in this state in very remote areas and very rural parts of the state and small communities to have affordable electricity. That is based on a couple of things. And one of those, as you've heard today, is preference power. We are preference power customers of Bonneville. That has been, at least so far, and it's of course getting somewhat questionable in terms of Bonneville's ability to continue to have low rates. However, up to this point in time, Bonneville has had low rates, and we have been able to take advantage of that, and that has been able to offset our extremely high cost of delivering utility, or delivering electricity in those very rural parts of the state. So Bonneville Power, the access to Bonneville Power, the cost of Bonneville Power is extremely important to rural electric cooperatives. And when we are aware of an entity the size of PGE that would by federal law have access to that power, it of course causes some concern as to how that would impact our rates. Bonneville Power has already overextended themselves in purchasing more power than they can generate, and that has increased cost tremendously to us. But they do have a federal obligation to serve preference power to preference customers, and this new entity, if it becomes a municipal utility, would be eligible for preference power from Bonneville. So the preference power issues are of concern. So we need to have a lot of discussion about the impact of their ability to get that power and how that would impact the rest of the customers in the state. So that is one issue that has some concern for us. A couple of the other issues that have some concern to us is, again, we are very small utilities. My smallest utility serves 1,500 customers. My largest utility serves 27,000. There's 750,000 customers right now served by PGE. So there's a tremendous difference in how those utilities operate. Again, we have been able to keep our prices very competitive with the urban areas in the state by keeping our costs down. We are, because we are governed by our boards of directors, we're not under PUC governance for our rates. There are many other areas in terms of regulation that we are exempt from because of our local governance, and it keeps our costs low. And that is what, frankly, again, serves the rural folks in the state very well. Now, if we are in the same boat, so to speak, as a municipal electric utility that serves 750,000 people, they are subject to regulation now that we are not because of our differences in size. And so all of a sudden we have concerns about how is that going to work. And I will tell you frankly that when we negotiated Senate Bill 1149, we asked for an exemption from almost all of 1149. We were not put in a position, and we were granted that by the legislature, we were not put in a position to have a mandatory portfolio option for our customers. We were not put in a position to offer direct access to our customers unless our customers asked. We were not put in a position to pay a 3% public purpose tax or a low-income billing assistance fee. And those were the provisions in Senate Bill 1149. Senate Bill 1149, as of January 1, 2003, The costs that have been reported to the PUC have been $115 million to implement. Those are the reported costs from the investor-owned utilities. And that's a lot of money, in my book. And because we were exempt from 1149, we have incurred no costs. We haven't gone to direct access. Our customers, of course, have not asked for that because the market hasn't been in a position that would be of any benefit to them to do that. So because we were able to, again, keep our utilities out of 1149 and the deregulation program in this state, our customers have, frankly, I think, been better served. Yes, PG had a tremendous cost rate increase to its customers. I happen to be one of those customers. But $115 million, you can contribute to that cost increase. So I think Representative Gallegos' comment about unintended consequences needs to really be taken to heart here. There have been unintended consequences to many things that have happened in this industry in the last 10 years. Starting with wholesale deregulation. Oregon used to have the lowest rates, I believe, next to Idaho in the entire country. It was a huge economic benefit to this state. It's a huge reason that many companies decided to locate here, and we've lost that. And that's an unintended consequence. I'm sure everybody believed in making the decisions that they did about changes in this industry that they were going to benefit customers. And they haven't, frankly. They simply haven't. You know, the jury's still out. Maybe DREG will eventually provide some benefit, but it hasn't as of today, and we've paid a big price for that. So we have concerns about unintended consequences. We have concerns about cost shifts that may spill over onto very small rural utilities. We have concerns about what happens with preference power. All of these can be addressed. And frankly, we've met with Commissioner Stan and we've met with representatives of the regional group, and they have been very open to our concerns. They've been very willing to discuss them. I guess my frustration is that it's all been talk. We haven't seen anything. We haven't seen any indication in writing. We haven't been given any piece of paper that says, yes, in fact, we understand your concerns and we're willing to sit down and address your concerns before this comes to a conclusion. And so we're anxious. We're anxious to see that. We're frustrated that the process has moved fairly slow. You know, this bill, I guess I'm concerned about the legislature playing a role in consumer-owned utility formation. You know, Hermiston, the city of Hermiston just formed a municipal electric utility. And I don't believe that the legislature, you know, should have had any authority over whether that happened or not. So I think there is a concern about that. On the other hand, I also don't want to see our issues unaddressed and the legislature actually signing dying and leaving, if that's possible, before anything happens where we do have any assurances that those issues are going to be addressed. So I think there's a little bit of a, you know, it's a time factor. And I would like to put on the record that we are waiting for some assurances from Commissioner Stan and the City of Portland and from the regional group that there is a way to address the issues of rural folks, and I think we will rest much easier if we can get to that point, but it hasn't happened yet. So I'm basically just here to express some frustration and concern, and also to just share with you what our issues really are in this possibility of a new municipal utility in Oregon. And again, just let me finally say, local control is a very good way to operate a utility. When you have locally elected boards of directors, our customers have access and control, and that is a very good thing and can be a very good thing. And it may be a very good thing for Oregon. But it will be a good thing if all citizens in this state benefit from it, not just the folks in Portland. Thank you.
Questions? Sandy, just on that last point of local control, looking at PGE currently having 730,000 or 750,000 customers in 51 different cities, you know, should there be local control of this utility by one city, you know, that then deals with all these other cities? Is that a local control issue?
Mr. Chair, I think that's a very legitimate question. You know, I can only compare it to, Harney Electric. Harney Electric is over in Burns, and we have a certificated service territory which goes beyond county lines. There's nothing contiguous about electricity service territories being contiguous with counties. They're not, as you can see by this map. We serve in 32 of 36 counties in Oregon. We do have a certificated service territory, and many of those have districts, which a certain person represents a district, and that district elects that person. So we're talking a small utility. We're talking a system that works very well in a small utility. You get to a utility that size, and everything changes. Literally everything changes, and will the fact that even if they are elected board members, who will they serve? What size of a board would be required to really have the kind of representation that we have? You know, those are very good questions.
And then, as you were talking about Senate Bill 49.
I will never forget that number.
Yeah. It's burned in the memory of many.
Yeah.
Obviously not me, though. But as you were talking about then the higher cost of power, kind of at the same time, and I just wanted to clarify that even though there were increased costs caused by 1149, there were other factors as well that have created increases in our rates that have basically driven businesses out of Oregon because we're no longer the lowest state in the country with as far as rates were concerned.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. It was a contributing factor. You know, there was $115 million spent on implementing that plan. No one, in essence, has gone to the market. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Did we have a drought? Yes. Did we have California dereg that was a disaster? Yes. We had a lot of contributing factors, and I don't want to ever, lead anyone to believe that I think that that is the only cause of rates going up. But it was a contributing factor to the kind of rate increase that we had in Oregon, because those are the kinds of costs that the PUC looks at when it determines rates. And when you spend $115 million, that has to be reflected in rates. That's the way the system works.
Okay. And one final cost issue was, or one of the factors has been, at least with PGE, was the Trojan nuclear facility. Do you have any knowledge of that facility?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I really don't. I know that I, as a PG ratepayer, have paid a price for that as well. And again, I guess that goes into the unintended consequences category, but no, I don't have any hard information.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for testimony.
Thank you.
And Matt Wingard.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Wingard. I'm the former executive director of Oregonians for Jobs and Power. I have kind of moved on to other things, but I remain a member of the organization, and when they called me yesterday and asked if I would come down and make this presentation, I agreed to do that. Oregonians for Jobs and Power is not taking a position on the bill before you today, but we have in the past provided informational presentations, and I was asked to come and do that, so that's why I'm here today, and I hope that I'm able to answer some of the questions that were raised during the previous Q&A that have been going on. This presentation is not very lengthy, and I'll try to run through it at a quick pace because I know you're all thinking about lunch.
Mr. Chair? Thank you. Matt, you mentioned you were the executive director of Oregonians for Jobs and Power. Can you tell me a little bit about that organization?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
We are an organization formed of private businesses, elected officials, concerned citizens, basically in response to what was happening about 8 months ago to a year ago, in which the counties were coming together and considering turning a PG into a public utility of some kind or another. Our members had some serious questions about, you know, whether or not what was the information. You know, the counties were not necessarily very forthcoming about what their plans were and what the effect were. They didn't really have any. They weren't paying for any studies to answer any of those questions. So we felt that it was important to have somebody coming in who offered a critical eye to that. And frankly, I'll share with you. I asked the committee assistant to pass out to all of you a copy of an Eco Northwest study that we commissioned. That sort of we asked them to try to answer some of these questions that were looming out there that many people wanted answered. Many of our members were concerned about and continue to be concerned about the what's perceived to be an anti-business climate that is developed. They're concerned about anything that sort of sends a message that Oregon isn't pro-business and pro-private enterprise. They're also very concerned about just conceptually what this public utility would look like. In answer to Representative Close's question, it would be the largest public utility in the Pacific Northwest. I'm not exactly sure if it would be the third largest in the country, but it would be very, very large. Almost all of the public utilities that currently exist within the state are what they call municipal utilities. They exist basically within the boundaries of a city, a municipality, and they're much smaller in scale than what's being proposed here. I think that speaks for itself. But so we got involved. We asked Eco Northwest to do a study. We began asking questions of the counties. What we found when they met was that they met in secret, and that they weren't very forthcoming about what they were talking about and what they were deciding and what direction they were going in. They like to point out that Enron and the creditors are very secret about the process, and to some extent that's exactly true. What we've found is that the county and the cities have been as equally secretive about their process, and we have not been encouraged by that process. I just want to run through these and get to the... There are two proposals out there that are sort of publicly known. One is this ballot initiative. Essentially, there are some folks who would like to turn PG service territory, which is in six counties, into five public utility districts, people utility districts, they like to call them. The two counties that would be combined, I believe, are Polk and Marion County, maybe Polk and Yamhill. But they're essentially this combination idea there. All the others would be standalone within their counties. There'd be a Clackamas County, People's Utility District, a Multnomah County, a Washington County. They attempted to collect signatures. At some point, they made a decision to go ahead just with the Multnomah initiative first. I think, frankly, it's a good political move. I think they're most likely to get the ballot initiative passed in Multnomah County, and by doing that and being successful, they've essentially condemned a section of PG, which is... which exists to be an integrated utility. And so once you pull Multnomah County out, you have a much better case to make to Washington and Clackamas County that they ought to go ahead and pass a People's Utility District initiative as well, because the entity's already essentially been broken up if the Multnomah County residents were to vote to do that. There's some real question about whether or not any of these condemnation proceedings would be allowed to condemn or gain access to anything outside of the actual county boundaries. As has been discussed before, PG has a lot of assets that exist outside of their service territory. And it's our belief that under this scenario, these utility districts would essentially only be able to condemn what is within the counties. So we like to say that they would be getting the worst of both worlds, because essentially they get all of the service territory, but none, practically none of the generation. And the only exception is that Clackamas County would end up with the hydro. Under this scenario, the Clackamas County voters should actually be encouraged to vote for it, because they would end up with more generating capacity than they have, than they need to provide. They would have excess that they could then go and sell. But all of the other people's utility districts would have no generating capacity, and they would have to go out on the market and buy all of it. And then you would leave all the thermal and everything that's in eastern Oregon outside of it, and you would essentially free up the creditors to sell that off because you've condemned all of the assets within the service territory, and you were not, they were not able legally to grab the thermal that's outside. The other possibility that's being talked about as far as a public utility is this concept of the City of Portland purchasing the entire utility and then making essentially a promise to work with the six counties to create a an advisory board or governing board or both to run the organization. I want to talk a little bit about the there's a draft governing proposal that was put out on May 7th, almost a month ago. And I shouldn't say that it was put out because it's actually not, it wasn't put out to be a public document, but we did get a hold of it. And there's some hint of sort of where the city is going and what they're thinking about. And this goes exactly to some of the concerns that a lot of people have about, and they're about how you would have a utility in which the City of Portland would own it and basically run it, but it would supposedly serve the interests of all six counties. And this is the reason why when the counties attempted originally to talk about coming together, that Polk and Yamhill essentially opted out of that discussion. According to their own draft proposal, the mayor, there would be a 9-member governing board, but the mayor of the City of Portland would appoint all 9 of those members. And then because of their fiduciary responsibility to pay back the money that they are issuing bonds for to purchase the entity, the City of Portland would basically maintain veto power over all of the decisions that the utility would make. It would also create an advisory council that would have 9 members. And just briefly here, I want to go through exactly how they currently envision that that advisory council would be made up. They would have a member from AOI, a member from ICNU, a member from the Citizens Utility Board, a member from the League of Oregon Cities, and then a member from the City of Portland on the advisory board, and then one member representing issues of social equity, which is, these are terms that they use, and one member representing environmental interests, and then 2 members that would be 2 members that the 6 counties could appoint. Now, originally, when we began asking the counties how they felt about this, and we heard from Polk and Yamhill, that they had serious concerns, and frankly, there are commissioners even in the other counties that are part of the regional power city group who are concerned about whether or not the 6 counties would really be represented well in this entity. What you see here, even in the draft proposal, is that really only 2 members of this 9-member board would be representing the interests of the 6 counties. So already, you have basically what we were concerned about last summer when we started raising questions. This was basically how we felt that the entity would be set up. And we're not convinced, and we haven't been convinced for some time, that this scenario really allows all of the ratepayers throughout the 6 counties to be equally represented, both as ratepayers and even politically, because everybody knows that there's politics at play in decisions that utilities make, that the legislature makes, anybody makes, and you want people to be equally represented if there are going to be those kinds of decisions made. We asked EcoNorthwest to answer the question about whether or not rates would come down. There were a lot of promises being made early on that if this were a public utility, rates were likely to come down. The original figure that was being thrown around was at least 10%. EcoNorthwest, in the report that I've asked to be distributed to you, essentially concluded that that wasn't likely for a host of reasons I outlined. What I wanted to point out also in this slide was that the City of Portland privately commissioned a study themselves to answer that same question and then did not release it. They were asked repeatedly to release the study. They held on there until after they made the decision to study, to go forward and spend and allocate $500,000 to look into the idea of buying and then enter into negotiations with Enron to the creditors to buy the utility. Only afterwards did they then release a report, and I should point out that you actually can't read most of the report. About half of it is redacted when you get a copy of it. Among what was there and could be read, their own study concluded that they weren't likely to achieve lower rates. So we were very concerned and actually lodged a protest at the time that they had this information before they made the decision, and then they did not release that to the public until afterwards. That was concerning to us. These are just some facts that I wanted to share with the committee. Four of the five highest residential rates in the state of Oregon are issued by public utilities, and the number in the parentheses is where PGE currently stands in that ranking, they're third. Five of the five highest commercial rates are issued by public utilities. PGE ranks ninth. And five of the five industrial rates are issued by public utilities, and PGE is sixth. Again, I don't want to take a lot of time on the EcoNorth study. You have it. I do want to highlight a few things that are in there, and if the committee has any further questions, I'd be happy to address them. But essentially, they talked about, EcoNorthwest talked about how there's a limit, and Sandy Flicker talked about that a while. There's a limited amount of preference power. It's already over subscribed. This is an enormous utility entity that would come in and be qualified for preference power. The analogy that was once expressed to me that I've used because I think it works is imagine an elephant sitting in a small wading pool. It basically, you know, all the water overflows. It's not very useful to anyone at that point. The other major concern that we've had all along is that all the ratepayers in the six counties currently enjoy oversight by the Oregon Public Utility Commission. If this were to become a public utility...
Matt, did you say they enjoy the oversight?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just clarifying. Yeah.
You can put your own spin on the word enjoy. Maybe I was being facetious, but...
That's a legal term, isn't it?
Right. If this were to become a public utility, the OPUC would not have oversight. So they would essentially be, the ratepayers would then be relying on the advisory board and the governing board to advocate their interests. And as I hope that we try to point out, there's some concern about whether or not that board would actually be representative of the six counties' interests. There is an issue of about $50 million or more in taxes that PGE pays to cities and counties, those essentially are legally required, but they disappear under a public utility. And the folks who are forming it have promised that they would essentially do something that was referred to as PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, but the track history with PILTs, at least those who've dealt with the federal government on PILT payments, is not particularly good. At the point that the city of Portland made the decision to go forward with this, Bill Miller from the IBEW, that represents a good chunk of the public employees, actually told them that they weren't spending anywhere near enough to actually study this, that all of the utilities that had come in and looked at purchasing this had spent, you know, $12 million or more, and the city was only considering spending $500,000. They really weren't allocating enough funds to study the issue forwards and back. We commissioned a poll to get some questions answered, and the first conclusion we got from our poll was that it was easy to see why proponents of public power were moving forward. I had somebody point out to me that the only thing this statistic proves is that 19% of the folks aren't reading the papers. But people in the poll that we took had an equally unfavorable opinion of the idea of the city of Portland controlling their power. We had a lot of county commissioners agree with this statement when we put it up. So what are the options out there? There are the two that I discussed that are the public power options, but there's also the idea that the creditors could issue stock to themselves and create a basically return PGE to the situation that it had before it was purchased, where it is a standalone, privately held company, locally managed, and it has stockholders. The original stockholders, obviously in this case, would be the creditors themselves, but it would be a listed company, and the stock price would be set based on supply and demand, and over time, as the creditors wished to cash out of that, they would let go of their stock on the open market. I don't really want to take a lot of time. I know we're coming up for lunch hour. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to attempt to answer them.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a number of times today that there's no indication that this public ownership idea would reduce power costs. Do you have an idea what the effect on power costs would be if the company were broken up and the power generating facilities were separated from the distribution company?
Representative Barnhart, Mr. Chair, we oppose the idea of breaking up the asset, too. The PGE is really designed to be an integrated utility. As the previous speaker pointed out, they generate about 50% of the electricity that they need for their customers, which forces them out onto the market for the other half of the money, or the other half of the electricity, essentially. Any breakup of this entity essentially would require the ratepayers, no matter who they're served by, either a private utility or a public utility, whoever's buying that power for them, it's going to have to go out on the open market for more of it if the generation facilities are sold off separately. And we think that would be a terrible idea. So, I mean, I guess the answer to your question is that we're convinced the rates would go up if the entity were broken up.
Isn't that a distinct probability in the current situation in the bankruptcy court?
Representative Barnhart, Mr. Chair, all the indications that we've ever heard from the creditors is that they have no interest in breaking up the asset, that they wanted to sell it as an integrated utility, and that was certainly how they put it up in the auction process. There's also some question about whether or not the OPUC would actually allow that breakup. I know there are some who believe that the court case in California bears directly on this, but there are also a number of attorneys and legal folks that we've consulted who don't believe that it's a direct apples-to-apples comparison, and that it's not necessarily the case that the creditors would be able to break up the asset without the OPUC being able to object to that. One thing is for certain, and that is if the ballot measure that's going to be on later this summer were to pass, and the people essentially by referendum or initiative chose to break up this asset, they would essentially be giving the creditors free rein, you know, carte blanche then to an invitation to break up the asset, because it would be broken up already, essentially.
One presumes that you or people who have the same understanding of the situation that you have will be campaigning against that measure. Given the way you've described it, at least, it doesn't sound like a very wise move from people who live in Multnomah County.
Representative Barnhart, Mr. Chair, that's certainly our opinion. We believe that the initiative process that's being proposed to create these five people's utility districts essentially is a bad fjudiciary decision. Even on, you know, just from a pure ratepayer standpoint, for just about everyone, like I said, except for maybe Clackamas County. I mean, you could really look at this and see a boon for the ratepayers in Clackamas County.
Okay, Representative Berger.
Yes, I'm very sensitive to the public meetings law. I wonder were meetings held because and they were able to be closed because of a lack of a quorum from each county? Was that what prevented it from being open?
Representative Berger, Mr. Chair, yes. Essentially, what we saw was that the counties would send one commissioner to these meetings. So they would essentially, the public meetings law requires, most of the commissions are three members,
right.
And so if two are there, then they have to have it open. If there are five members, if three are there. So they would essentially skirt around that by not sending, not meeting that legal requirement for keeping an open meeting. We realized that they had a legal right to keep the meeting closed. We just felt that it was bad public decision to go ahead and go through this process and keep it closed to the public.
Right. All right, thanks.
Further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thanks
for your testimony. Tom O'Connor. That's our last witness to testify on this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom O'Connor. I represent the 10 municipal, 11, excuse me, of the municipal electric utilities in Oregon, primarily the smaller systems in the state. My stomach's growling, so I'm sure yours is. I'll be very brief. I just want to express our concern about this bill, our opposition to the bill. I'd like to second the testimony of Gary Conkling. And I think just, let me just pull back to something I think which to me is the nut of this. Do we have concerns about how this entity, a publicly owned entity, is going to interface with us and other areas of the state? Yes. Do we have those same concerns about how a reconstituted or separated Enron would have? Absolutely, yes, and more so. And I guess let me just go back to something that Representative Barnhart asked. Why do we care? And I think, again, coming back to something Mr. Conklin said, we are in the middle of an auction process, or Enron is in the middle of an auction process to sell this asset, to sell an incredibly important asset to the people of the region. It is a pretty secret process that's pretty hard to divine. I'm certainly not on the inside of it. I think, again, the one entity that has stepped forward to attempt at least to try to get a broad public interest in this has been the City of Portland. I don't know the nature of the discussions that they are under a gag order and so on. There are a lot of things that I would like to see in a regional entity that was formed, but again, I think it's really critical that they step forward, because this idea of Representative Barnhart's that it could be stripped down to its component parts is not an invalid fear. In 1997, when Enron acquired PGE, and it was all approved, the first thing that they did was come in and propose to strip that utility into a shattered glass of irresponsible parts. And I have three huge boxes in my office of PC case UE 102, it was referred to, which I would encourage at some point you might get a summary. What they wanted to do was to pull apart that utility so that, for example, Visa or MasterCard would own the billing system. The response, the customer safety response, when you had an outage, you'd call an 800 number somewhere in the country. You wouldn't call your local utility. You'd call an 800 number. They were going to strip off all the generation assets and sell them separately. They would be totally unregulated by anybody, elected officials, local, or the PUC. It was just you strip it bare. And so I guess I think it's real important that the city has stepped forward. I would urge your involvement and your further discussion of these issues and tracking it, participation. I would urge you not to set up what amounts to an ex post facto preemption, which is the way this bill is written. I think it would harm the negotiating process. I would be happy to answer any questions or about sizes of utilities and so on. Thank you.
Questions, Representative Berger?
I just want to say that, you know, we have a public relations crisis in Oregon about the way the public feels about government, irregardless of anything that happens with this. If you throw in the Enron debacle, along with other kinds of scandals, I think as government, whether it's cities or whether it's state, we have to be really careful about how private we become. I realize that in negotiations, there always is that level of confidentiality. But I think where you're not going to be paying taxes, where taxpayers are going to be responsible for a number of things, where you're going to move away from regulation, and then to kind of cloud it in confidentiality only leads to the cynicism that we already have in the public in Oregon today. So those are my comments, Mr. Chairman, that I feel are it is incumbent upon the City of Portland to be extremely open as soon as possible in their own dialogue with the public so that they don't harm all of us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, I agree absolutely about the obligation of all of us to have as much of this discussion in the public arena particularly the governance structure. I guess I would point out, though, that the gag order that was imposed as part of participating in the auction process was not imposed by the PUC or requested by the city or anybody else. It was imposed by Enron as a condition of participating in the process. So it's something that is repellent to public power, certainly, and to, you know, what we're used to operating under. At this moment, we're stuck with it as part of the auction but that's why I think we can have these other discussions, particularly about the nature of the governance structure, as you point out, and those should be open.
Ah, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, you listened to, I think you're here to hear the testimony of others. Do you have any reaction to the comment that a takeover of PGE by the city of Portland would not lower rates? Do you have a comment on that?
Ms. Chair, Representative Backlund, I don't think that anyone at this stage of the game can tell you rates are going to be higher, rates are going to be lower. We don't have enough information at this point. We don't know the price in terms of the auction. There's just a whole heck of a lot we don't know. If it was a publicly owned entity, would it be locally controlled? Would the folks have that control over it? Yes. How the rate structure, you know, would work out, I don't know. My feeling is that we have a lot better chance at keeping rates reasonable, absent all the international and national forces, a far better chance of keeping rates reasonable and under our control if we do have some local and regional control over it, rather than having it stripped off, sold off, or purchased by or refinanced by the existing creditors themselves, whose only interest is in making money. It's not in reasonable rates for the citizens of the PGE service territory. So I guess that's where I would come down. I don't think I'd make any promises either way at this stage of the game, but I'd look for where we have the best shot at reasonable rates for the future.
Follow up, Mr.
Chance, follow up.
Tom, also, I'm wondering your reaction on the issue of the preference power issue. Sandy Hooker expressed concern about what might happen to the rural co-op if PGE became, or if PGE was taken over by the city of Portland. Any reaction to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, we have concerns as well. My folks are, some of the smallest utilities in the state of Oregon, cities Cascade Locks, 500-foot customers, etc. We buy all our power virtually from Bonneville. So what happens to Bonneville affects us considerably. Bonneville is short right now, as was said. The federal law allows a legitimately formed and owned and operated public entity to have access to Bonneville Power after the current contracts expire. That would have to be worked out at the regional level. There are a variety of ways to do that. And we have to see how that comes down.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, follow up.
Tom, thank you for that. I don't know, I'm thinking that's a bit of a negative to the idea of a takeover, because the preference power issue is very, very important, not only to your municipals, but to the rural co-ops. So I'm presuming that you would agree that would be a very likely negative to a takeover by the city of Portland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Backlund, it could be, but I guess our existing situation isn't so sure either. Right now, the consumer-owned utilities in the Northwest within the Bonneville system subsidize, we pay for, out of our rates, what's called a residential exchange that was alluded to earlier. So we pay for, excuse me, it gets me upset when I talk about this, but we end up paying for a reduction in the rates of customers of private utilities around the state. That subsidy in the last couple of years has gone up in a huge amount, in large part because Bonneville didn't have any enough power. There's no question the Northwest is short as a whole. We're going to have to look at new generating assets and how that's all going to work out, I don't know. But is it a concern? Yes. Is the status quo absolutely safe for us, going to guarantee us low rates? No way. So there's a process to work that out, and we'd have to do that.
Okay. Is that it?
Oh. One question, and then a very short comment, I think. I think you just told us that the secrecy situation that we're in now, that Representative Virgin doesn't like and that I don't like either, is dictated by the process established by the bankruptcy court. Is that right, or did I misunderstand what you said?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, that's correct. The secrecy part of the auction process and the details and so on of acquiring the assets, there's nothing that says that we can't have a discussion about how an entity ought to operate or be constructed and so on, as Mr. Conklin said.
Okay, well then I'll second her concerns about that, because I think that ought to be open and public, and it sounds like it's not, and that would concern me a great deal. The process about how we're going to set up a successor entity ought to be a much more public process than apparently it is now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, just for the record, there have been a number of public meetings that have been held, open forums that was sponsored by both the city and then I think the counties did some as well. You know, would I like to see more discussion of that in the regional level? Yeah. But there have been several public meetings where folks were invited to come, both formal hearings at the city, I think, and then several hearings that were held in the county about some county proposals. So there have been discussions.
And then my comment, and very short, this is a very high-risk situation, isn't it? I mean, in the long run, Oregon is, in the immediate future, Oregon is facing the distinct possibility that a substantial portion of our population and industrial base will face either increased or at least volatile power costs simply because of actions taken by a bankruptcy court which has no reason to care about our best interest. And while I don't know whether I like the idea of Portland buying this power company or not, I certainly like the idea that there are people out there who have a great deal more reason to have an interest in the well-being of Oregonians and the power costs that Oregonians pay. They're interested in looking at this in addition to whatever it is going on in the bankruptcy court.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And, we will continue to visit this issue, colleagues. I think the issues that came out today, especially by our members, are justified, and I think that ultimately what we have seen is almost a track where PGE has, or City of Portland has gone on to see what they can do about purchasing PGE, thinking that they can deal with the governance issues later. And at least from my perspective, I think City of Portland needs to understand that, you know, their purchase should be conditioned upon having more information about what that governance situation should be. And I think because there are 51 or 50 other cities involved, quite a number of folks that are outside the City of Portland that are not have no impact on the decisions made by the City Council in determining how PGE is going to be run, if they do acquire it, that it's justified for the state legislature to be involved in that discussion. So
we will continue,
I think, forward to pursue that discussion further to see, you know, where we ought to be going. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to join Representative Verger and Representative Barnhart in expressing concern about any secrecy in terms of the meetings, and we would hope that they would be held very openly.
Thank you. Okay, that will close the public hearing on House Bill 2356. And colleagues, let the state care people know earlier that because there had been some discussion about the provision about how the state fair would be accounting for this, we were trying to get somebody from the audits division or from LFO in to talk about a little bit what those different alternatives may be. Couldn't do that, so we'll just hold off till next week for that discussion. So with that, we are adjourned.